time? Not by too much?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have the honor of the first question, and it is, how do you perceive the role of the employee constituency groups, i.e. civil service, administrative professionals, faculty senate, graduate council, and other groups in policy development and implementation and decision making?
Yeah, I mean, say, let me put it this way, and in one of the reasons I put the previous chart up there is to point out that that you know, sustained progress really is not possible without deep engagement of the groups that you're talking about, whether they are faculty, whether they are students, whether they are key external constituents of the university. You know, leadership can force some change, and maybe it will go on for a year or two, but trying to sustain it is a very different matter. And so sustaining progress, sustaining change really cannot happen without the engagement of key internal as well as external constituencies of the university. I think it is critical, and again, you know, both in terms of planning as well as in terms of execution, that the appropriate constituencies are engaged. Now, again, there is a fine balance in engagement. There is also between engagement and decision making. I think it is important. It is the responsibility of leadership to make decisions. Certainly, there are areas where it is the purview of faculty, for example, to make key decisions. There are areas where students make decisions in terms of, you know, a lot of the activities they do. But in terms of the overall priorities of the university, in terms of overall directions, I think it is the purview of the university leadership, again, with input from various constituencies to make decisions. But I think one of the most important thing I've learned is that it is equally important for the university leadership, one, to be that it is accountable to the different constituencies that you are talking about in terms of the decisions it makes, as well as explaining to the constituencies that if a decision is made, why it is made in a particular direction. You know, not everyone may be on board regarding a particular decision, and that is okay as long as there is a good reason for making that decision. It is grounded in facts, it's grounded in data, and the fact, as I said earlier, that you know, one can cycle back and explain to the constituencies why the decision is made. I also believe that, I know it's a little hard in an academic environment, that at the end of the day, we need to be in a place where constituencies are aligned in the direction the university is going. If I had a white chart, I would have drawn my engineering diagram here, but you can look at a vector in terms of where it is going, and individually, there may be a lot of variations of individual vectors, whether they are constituencies or they are academic units or they are academic faculty. The strengths are very different, as long as the overall alignment is in the direction that everyone agrees to.
What process would you use to help campus reevaluate SIU's mission and goals with an eye toward what the university might realistically look like 5 or 10 years down the road? In essence, how do you create a long-term vision for the campus in times like these?
So let me tell you the process we used recently to update our strategic plan. It's only about a few months ago or a few years old. So basically what I invited was one of our faculty members, actually the chair of our applied economics department, to chair a group consisting of about 10 faculty and administrators to lead a process to do two things. One, to assess as an independent entity what progress we have made over the past 5 years. And then given that, you know, what would be their thinking and their reflection going forward. Part of the charge was that they were going to be engaging with a lot of external constituents. So for example, our Board of Trustees to get their perspective, engage with the OSU Foundation Board. And the foundation is a separate, this is the fundraising entity for the university. But you know, to get their perspective in terms of where do they see future possibilities for the university. So to get engaged with a number of constituents group, but at the end of the day, come back to the university with you know, what are some of the things that over the next 5 years, and again, given these external and environmental drivers, where do the things the university should be focused on? Now, we took that in, I took that input and really worked with my leadership team, which is academic deans and vice president, vice provost, to really then refine that vision to make sure that, you know, a lot of time when a committee is working on ideas, and there's nothing wrong with it, and that's where creativity comes from, but there are a lot of ideas, and then the question is, you know, how do you prioritize and how do you bring them down so there is a focus in terms of what's going on? So we then took that input and really created that focus for our strategic plan and our implementation effort. So to respond to your question, I think engaging the community, again, cultures are different. It's hard for me to say, you know, what group or groups would make sense. But certainly working with the groups that you were talking about earlier, and then but then having some mechanisms of, at the end of the day, not having a process where everything is a priority, because if everything is a priority, as I said, nothing is a priority. But and at the end of the day, particularly given the resource constraints that, you know, every university faces, is then focusing on a few ideas that we are going to advance over the next few years. I think it's also important to understand that just because something is not a priority over the next 3 years, that it's not a priority at all for the university. But at this point in time, given everything that is out there, you know, maybe it makes sense to advance three or four things, and 4 or 5 years down the road, the environment can be very different. That might require, you know, a different set of priorities.
What do you see as the chancellor's role in boosting employee morale in an era of economic and financial uncertainty for the university, which includes concerns about job security and reduced benefits?
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. And I wish there was an easy answer for what you're talking about. So let me just reflect a little bit on a few of the things that might be relevant there. One of them, I just put it here, and I truly believe in it, that you build trust not by talking about it, but by delivering results, and by meaningfully engaging people in that particular process. Doesn't take out all the uncertainty in the, and I mean, say, part of, I think, you know, as a university leader or any leader of the, you know, you can't take out uncertainty from the situation. But what you could take out is provide as much clarity as one can and be as transparent as one can. So one of the things, for example, even in the 2007-09 significant economic environment that we were facing, we were very, very transparent with the faculty and with the staff and with the students in terms of what's going on. So I think transparency, being authentic in terms of what you're communicating, and you're not trying to just make people feel good about it, because in the long term that doesn't help anyone. It's better to be really honest about things and bring them in the fold. As I said, you know, meaningful engagement where it makes sense, rather than just random, you know, creating a lot of work for people. And most importantly, having some milestones, even if they are short term, and even if there are some small victories at times, contribute more to the morale of people than long-term plans that don't materialize.
You mentioned earlier that student characteristics have changed somewhat, especially in regard to technology, and that can help foster connectiveness, but can also foster a sense of detachment. Can you elaborate for us a little bit on what you've done at either former institutions or current institutions to make sure that student voices are heard and that they are involved in the decision-making process?
So the students are really a key part, both in terms of the governance, overall shared governance structure at Oregon State University, as well as at the Board of Trustees level. We, like SIU, had we were part of a system for a long time, and only about 2 years ago that the governor and the political process decided that each university is going to have their own institutional board. So not to get into history, but in terms of the Board of Trustees, we have a student representation who's a voting member of the 12 or 13 member board for the trustees. But at the university level, what we call the Associate Students of Oregon State University, ASOSU, are really key component of key decisions around around things that really matter for students. Tuition, fees, whether we need to use Canvas or Blackboard in terms of the teaching infrastructure. In my position, I don't appoint too many committees. I only have about three or four committees that I, as a provost, appoint. Faculty Senate has a lot of committees that we work with, and so the committees I appoint is that there's a budget committee that provides broad oversight for the budget and makes recommendation for the tuition. There's a committee that's focused on student success and engagement in terms of the activities that are needed to increase retention and graduation rates. And we have one around really changing the culture of the institution around internationalization and diversity. And all those committees make sure that student body is very well represented and are part of the conversations in terms of the recommendations that come up. But separate from that, both myself, the president, we meet regularly with the student leaders, both at the undergraduate and the graduate side. So again, it goes back to the earlier question, the culture one is trying to create. What does shared governance really mean? Whether it's with students or with faculty or or with staff, and how do you meaningfully engage them in matters that really matter to them?
Please describe your experience working with doctoral students and programs, and in doing so, how vital you feel they are to a university like SIU Carbondale.
Yeah. So the first part of your question, if I gathered, is just my experience in terms of working with graduate students, doctorate students in particular. And then the second part, I'm just trying to capture it, to make sure is what it means for SIU in terms of, that particular population. I have been part of a Carnegie Research One University throughout my career, both Arizona State as well as at Oregon State University. And graduate education, in particular doctorate education, is absolutely critical. It's critical. So first of all, let me back off. I consider a university to be a teaching laboratory, just like a hospital being a lab for creating the next generation of physicians. I think a university is a laboratory for creating the next generation of teachers, for creating the next generation of scientists, for next generation of researchers. So graduate education, from that perspective, I think is the responsibility for every university that has a mission, as part of its mission. Research is part of its mission, and certainly that is true here at SIU from that perspective. I have personally, in terms of working with grad students, that was a critical component of it, of my own development, if you would, and I learned a lot from them. And frankly, the only reason I stopped working with graduate students is because when I got into particularly central administration, I thought it's not fair to work with students if I'm not spending the time to sustain an active research program. But I think it is an absolutely critical component. Now, I think the more relevant question that you asked to some degree is, what does it really mean here at SIU? And I was having this conversation yesterday with President Dunn, just in terms of research and graduate education, and what does it mean, for this campus in particular, as you look forward. So let me just first say, part of it is a conversation that needs to occur within campus. So I don't want to come in and say, oh, okay, this is what things need to look like, because I don't think that's fair, in part because I really do not know very well the culture of the organization. But as I said earlier, you know, SIU is a Carnegie Research, defined as RUH. And so research is a critical component of what you do. And I'm using research in the broad sense of creative activity. I mean, the humanities research is very different than it is in engineering or in the physical sciences, of course. Engaging graduate students is critical. I also think one of the things that perhaps should be looked at, or you know, at least we have looked at OSU quite closely, is the balance between doctorate students and professional masters. Because as you all know, doctorate education is expensive. Whenever you know you are creating a program that brings in doctorate students, it requires a lot of resources, both in terms of faculty, but also in terms of attracting high quality graduate students and sustaining them. And so one of the strategies that we have used is to use professional programs like MBA, Masters in Engineering, or Masters in Public Health to build those programs, but use that revenue really to fund doctoral education. Because state funding is limited as it is here, and there are limited degrees of freedom. So I hope, did I capture the, yeah.
What steps would you take to foster cooperation between campus units in order to eliminate the silo mentality that can exist when those units are competing for resources? And do you have specific examples of working in such scenarios?
Lots of examples. So I'm trying to see only to give you one or two so I don't take the rest of the time. But let me just share a couple of things with you. So when we went particularly through our major change, and I've really mentioned this to the search committee when we had the Skype interview, that really our basis for growth were really laid out at the time when we were really struggling, and so that really is the time when we helped position the university differently. But one of the things, well, two things we did. One thing we did was that we created virtually, if you would, but really a divisional structure that sort of on top of the college structure that typically exists in our universities. Again, we didn't want to spend the rest of our lives arguing whether we should combine colleges or not, because that doesn't lead any place. A lot of conversation with very little outcome. But what we really wanted to do was to make sure that colleges start to work with each other in a way that perhaps they have not done previously. So we created four divisions that really aligned with the four key distinctive areas we defined in the strategic plan. And to give you a couple of examples, so we created a division of health sciences that included our units of public health, pharmacy, vet med, recognizing that a lot of work also happens in other colleges like toxicology and ag sciences or in biochemistry that is in the College of Science and so on. So to give you an example of what they did was, you know, they have created a graduate program, a doctoral program in comparative health sciences for the entire. And so the intent was that how do we define some new identities for colleges beyond the identities that already exist for them? Many of the graduate programs that actually all, pretty much all the graduate programs in particular that we have created over the past, I would say 4 or 5 years have all been interdisciplinary. Comparative health sciences, women's studies, natural resources, and so they're all programs that bring colleges or faculty from different colleges together. We are, you know, as you probably all know, that we've very successfully completed our capital campaign, $1 billion capital campaign. We are starting to look at what do we do next. And in fact, so the capital campaign we completed was very college-centric. You know, it was because, in part because alumni associate themselves with colleges. But the next campaign we are really trying to create, we are changing the structure, and we are really trying to create it around themes. So it really cuts across multiple colleges. So for example, we are now trying to focus on marine sciences is one example that really includes six academic colleges in advancing the marine science program. We are doing the same thing in, for example, in material science that again cuts across four or five different colleges. So we are trying to build the structures which take time to develop, but we are hoping that over a 5, 6, 7 year period, you know, we'll start moving towards a university that start looking at program that really cut across units, recognizing that you really do need strong disciplinary faculty to advance these areas. I mean, say, one of the areas we have been really pushing is genetics and biocomputing, but that doesn't happen without strong computer scientists and mathematicians and life scientists and so on. But at the end of the day, how do you pull them all together to really address key problems that you're facing?
What thoughts do you have about the university's enrollment and retention matters, and what are the critical areas to achieving great success in both areas?
Well, I was hoping I can get some answers from the community here in terms of the enrollment growth itself. And I really think it is one of the most, it's an important question for the university really to consider in terms of the enrollment patterns and student success. And frankly, it's something that also caught my eye. Again, I don't know the region, but as I looked at the profile of programs here at SIU, and I mentioned this to numerous people before, I mean, say, your programs are like Oregon State. It's like a land-grant institution. You don't call it land-grant, but pretty much you have ag and forestry and engineering. So you look at the professional programs, building on a solid foundation, as well as, you know, the creative work that goes on in the arts and humanities. So I was somewhat surprised at the fact that the enrollments have declined over the past few years or past decade or so, and some of the student achievement numbers have been relatively flat over the years. I am going to venture not to present a solution because I really do not know much about the, and it's bordering on arrogance trying to come and say, okay, this is what the university should be doing. But what I would suggest is that as we looked at, you know, one of the things that was really key in terms of where we were and where we went is we recognize that state is not going to be an answer for what we want to do. And I don't want to, I do want every, you know, to, and I've mentioned this to our faculty, we get about $80 to $90 million from the state each year. And that's, if you look at all, the entire budget, it's about a $1 billion budget. If you take out research and auxiliaries, it's about $500 million budget. Small number, but still a significant component. As I tell our community, it will take a $3 billion endowment to generate $80 million a year. So it's not a non-trivial sum of money. But even if the state of Illinois was to reverse the 31% cut and say, okay, it's going to be flat, I think it will be great in terms of providing the undergraduate education, but I really think, or I am sure at this stage, unless something drastically changes here in the states, that state support is not an answer to building the margin of excellence that you or we want to build in our institutions. That really needs to come from something else. And it needs to be a strategy that needs to be all-encompassing. It needs to be a strategy that includes private fundraising. It needs to be a strategy that includes perhaps growing some targeted programs in terms of research. And it needs to be a strategy that is really well thought out in terms of enrollment management. This is really the question that you asked, that considers the mix of students from the region, from Illinois, with non-residents, with international students. It needs to be a careful consideration of how do we market a professional master's program Do we have the quality to sell the program at market value, for example, versus marketing them marketing everything at the same rate? It needs to carefully consider what role technology and online education plays, both in terms of students who are on campus, but even more importantly, are there targeted programs where SIU really has the niche to market those programs nationally and globally? Both from an education perspective, but also from diversifying the fiscal portfolio of the university. So I think needs to be a really careful assessment of looking at the broader enrollment management strategy, because ultimately, faculty, staff drive the success in terms of enabling the success of students who come here. And those numbers are all tied up. You know, I am sure that 80% of your budget is tied up in personnel, though I haven't looked at it, but you know, a large proportion of your budget would be salaries for faculty and staff. To create positions, new positions, whether they're for advising or for faculty, given the flat state funding, there needs to be some thought given how does one generate that resource.
What do you think the key to student success is at a university such as SIU, and how would you personally contribute to student success?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think everyone talks really highly here about, and I have no doubt in my mind that it is true, is that how much the community care about students that come to SIU. And a lot of the time students come to SIU is because of the perceptions that the community has about the caring and feeding that really occurs as far as the faculty are concerned and as far as the staff are concerned. So that's really remarkable. And so the challenge is how do you sustain that culture while you look at, the university as a whole need to perhaps think about expanding or growing, but at the same time, you do want to sustain that part of the culture. In fact, one of the biggest challenges we have at OSU right now is exactly that, that as the university has grown tremendously, how do you sustain the culture of collaboration and caring and respect of people? Because growth brings its own challenges with it, as you all know. So frankly, I will take those challenges any time than the other challenges that I've also had the privilege to provide oversight on. So I think that there are some really neat things going on in terms of the university community, how much they care about students. I heard a number of stories yesterday in terms of engaging students in faculty research and high impact experiences. Now certainly, I'm sure that those could be broadened, I have no doubt in my mind, but at least there's a strong base to start from. And I think a lot of times, student retention and students continuing really depends on their engagement in these type of high impact experiences and how they connect socially. At the end of the day, students drop, there's certainly financial reasons, but at the end of the day, a lot of students don't continue, not because they're not good academically or they can't perform well academically, but because they have a difficult time really adjusting to the college environment and to the new social environment, and particularly here because I suspect many of the students come from really small communities. And while Carbondale isn't really big, but 25 or 28 still is quite big if you're coming from a community of 5,000 or 500. So I think that is really critical. We are in the process right now of hiring 40 new faculty for fall term, and we have hired about 250 new tenure track lines over the past 4 or 5 years. And if you look at our website, and we are also focused very, very intentionally on improving student success at OSU. I mean, say our retention rate is about 84%. I think we should be closer to about 88-90%. Our six-year graduation rate is about 63%. I think we should be closer to 70%. And so if you, going back to the faculty, if you were to look at our website, the faculty we are hiring now the announcement. It is through the lens of student success and lens of increasing diversity and inclusiveness on campus. And we have made efforts in the past before. You know, I truly believe that research teaching needs to be integrated, and we have made every effort that people we bring in are not just researchers or not just teachers. Though there is a role for those individuals on campus, and so we have people who are, you know, just focused on research, but they're not tenure track faculty, and we have people, you know, instructors who are just focused on teaching, but the tenure track faculty that really is the core of an educational institution, I truly believe need to really contribute to both areas, both teaching and creative activity. And so we really focused on bringing in people that to them, student success is a high priority. And at the end of the day, it's important to have the faculty that value that is placed on student and students. So in terms of my contributions, it has been less in terms of being in the classroom or working with students. It's more been in terms of, again, the type of faculty we hire, the message that I send to academic deans and the leadership of the university in terms of holding them accountable for moving the right metrics that are associated with students. And in terms of working with particularly the foundation to create the resources that perhaps are needed for having sustaining some of the high impact practices, some of the funds that are needed to keep students at the university.
As is the case in any college town, SIU has a unique relationship with the city of Carbondale and the broader region. You touched on a few of these items on the previous two questions, but can you elaborate on any strategies you may have used at other universities or any strategies you may envision using here to help build the relationship, enhance the relationship with the city and the region?
Thank you for the question. One of the questions I've asked, I think pretty much everyone I have met is, so if the university were to, say, decide to grow its enrollments, and how would the city and the community react to it? Because being in from a college town, not that different from Carbondale, I know that there are always some tensions between growth and maintaining or sustaining a quality of life within a community. And so we have gone through some of those conversations, let me put it this way, in Corvallis. I think one of the good things that happened was, you may already know that, but during the 80s and early 90s, Hewlett-Packard had a major facility in Corvallis. In fact, they produced their inkjets for the entire division for the entire company in Corvallis. And as that moved overseas and HP ain't exactly doing great at the moment, they really downsized the operation. So they have gone from about 7,000 employees to about 1,000 employees at the moment. And the company, I think, is thinking of spinning off their different divisions. And by November, we suspect that it's going to even decrease further. And so one of the things the university has done is come in and fill that vacuum. And say, as they have declined, the university, both the students and the community has grown. And so it's been a sort of a healthy balance from that particular perspective. So I think that's really, but engaging the city, engaging certainly the council and the mayor and other key constituents from the city to be part of that type of a development plan as part of the process, I think is important. And frankly, if I were to be critical of us, we waited too long. We waited too long in terms of putting some things in place, and then we started talking with the city. And in fact, you know, particularly when folks around the university started complaining about parking and things of that nature, and I think that was a conversation we should have had well ahead of time. As I said earlier, you know, again, I do not know that the environment here. But SIU, it appears to me, just looking at the geography, is, you know, has a pretty an important position in this part of the state in terms of potentially contributions to really economic and social development of communities. Again, as a land grant university, I travel around the state of Oregon. We have offices in every each of the 36 counties in the state. That gives me an opportunity to meet with local folks, commissioners, and so on and so forth, to get an understanding of what their priorities are. I don't think SIU is that different from it. So maybe a focus in terms of better understanding, but also trying to connect with, and again, I'm speaking from ignorance here, with the perhaps the larger business communities in St. Louis and some of those areas, particularly with the suite of programs, and I keep going back to it. Tremendous opportunity.
Lastly, would you tell us something about yourself that you feel provides you a unique advantage to your ability to succeed as Chancellor of SIU Carbondale?
You don't want me to repeat my presentation, do you? So first of all, I am, as I said, I'm very at a point at OSU where I think the university is just doing great. A friend of mine who's a consultant was on campus recently, and I was talking with him about this opportunity and said, if you were to explore this opportunity, you can walk away feeling good about where things are. And, all of us are dispensable at the end of the day. I'm a fall dead tomorrow morning. The university will be around, either this or OSU, for the next 300 years. But more importantly, I think what I'm looking at is an institution where I can make a difference. So it's part of it for me also trying to understand, where the university is and where the community is. And is there an alignment, not in terms of the strategic plan or things of that nature, but in alignment in terms of, a passion and an interest in really building an institution and taking it to the next level of excellence. Again, however we as a community want to define it, not in terms of rankings and ratings, but in terms of what it really means in terms of quality education and in terms of really building an institution that really grows over time. So that's one thing. The other thing, as I said earlier, is I look at the programs over here I look at some of the challenges you are facing. Again, as I said at the start of my presentation, no two institutions are alike, no two cultures are alike. I truly believe that. Just trying to import something from A to B doesn't work. We try to do that way too much. But I think there are lessons learned that I feel that could be of value to SIU as you move forward. And lastly, again, from looking outside in, it appears to me there's tremendous opportunity. There's tremendous potential for SIU, whether it's in students, whether it's in the impact that the university can have regionally and beyond. Or whether it's in building selective creative programs, I think there is tremendous potential for the university. And again, the university obviously deserves the best. But whoever leader you decide to come to the university, I truly hope that they would be able to move the university and recognize the potential that exists here.